Although I have touched here on my very private preoccupations, I can see nonetheless that I've been putting off the essential. Silence is not a natural environment for stories, Miss Winter told me once. They need words. Without them, they grow pale, sicken, and die, and then they haunt you. Quite right, too. So here is my story. I was 10 when I discovered the secret my mother was keeping. The reason it matters is that it wasn't her secret to keep. It was mine. My parents were out that evening. They didn't go out often, and when they did, I was sent next door to sit in Mrs. Robb's kitchen. The next-door house was exactly like ours, but reversed, and the backwardness of it all made me feel seasick. So when parents' evening out rolled around, I argued once again that I was old enough and sensible enough to be left at home without a babysitter. I had no great hope of success, yet this time my father agreed. Mother allowed herself to be persuaded with only the proviso that Mrs. Robb would look in at 8:30. They left the house at 7 o'clock, and I celebrated by pouring a glass of milk and drinking it on the sofa, full of admiration at my own grandness. Margaret Lee, old enough to stay home without a sitter. This was it, the rite of passage, staying home alone. For so long I had wanted this, and now that it was here, I didn't know what to make of it. I'd expected that I would expand to fit the experience automatically, that I would get my first glimpse of the person I was destined to be. I'd expected the world to give up its childlike and familiar appearance to show me its secret adult side. Instead, cloaked in my new independence, I felt younger than ever. Was there something wrong with me? Would I ever find out how to grow up? I toyed with the idea of going round to Mrs. Robb's, but no, there was a better place. I crawled under my father's bed. The space between the floor and the bed frame had shrunk since I was last there. Hard against one shoulder was the holiday suitcase, as grey in daylight as it was here in the dark. It held all our summer paraphernalia. Sunglasses, spare film for the camera, the swimming costume that my mother never wore but never threw away. On the other side was a cardboard box. My fingers fumbled with the corrugated flaps, found a way in, and rummaged. The tangled skein of Christmas tree lights, feathers covering the skirt of the tree angel. The last time I was under this bed, I had believed in Father Christmas. Now I didn't. Was that a kind of growing up? Wriggling out from under the bed, I dislodged an old biscuit tin. There it was, half sticking out from under the frill of the valance. I remembered the tin. It had been there forever. A picture of Scottish crags and firs on a lid too tight to open. Absently, I tried the lid. It gave way so easily under my older, stronger fingers that I felt a pang of shock. Inside was Father's passport and various, differently sized pieces of paper, forms, part printed, part handwritten. Here and there a signature. For me, to see is to read. It has always been that way. I flicked through the documents. My parents' marriage certificate, their birth certificates, my own birth certificate. Red print on cream paper. My father's signature. I refolded it carefully, put it with the other forms I'd already read, and passed on to the next. It was identical. I was puzzled. Why would I have two birth certificates? Then I saw it. Same father, same mother, same date of birth, same place of birth. Different name. What happened to me in that moment? Inside my head, everything came to pieces and came back together differently. In one of those kaleidoscopic reorganizations the brain is capable of. I had a twin. Ignoring the tumult in my head, my curious fingers unfolded a second piece of paper. A death certificate. My twin was dead.